Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. Thank you guys so much for tuning into today's show. I am your host, Angela Alberti. You know what we're all about. We're all about workforce ecosystem, staffing, everything that is involved in putting the people to work every single day. I am very excited about today's episode. I'm sitting down with Matt. Matt, can you give the audience a little bit of a background on yourself?
Sure. Matt Sharpless, a longtime IT staffing person. Been in the industry for 32 years, based out of Kansas City with an office in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and excited to talk with you.
IT staffing, definitely an area where I'm sure you've seen a lot of growth within the scope of your professional career. As I was leading up to today's episode, I always think it's interesting to hear about how folks fall into the space, because usually staffing is an industry where you just kind of get sucked into it. But that's not necessarily the case for you. Can you give us a little bit more background on that?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I always hear that too. And I'm actually one of the very few that chose the field, knew about it. I grew up in Michigan, and my mom's friend owned a staffing firm, office clerical staffing company, and put me to work during my summers off in college. So I knew about it in the late 80s, coming home to Michigan and working for the various companies that I did, and there were 8-to-5 jobs, for a couple months. And then in college, I was really interested in organizational psychology. I'd always had somewhat of an interest in computers as well. My mom was a school teacher, and with all the book points she got a Commodore 64, and I actually taught myself how to code in BASIC a little bit. But anyway, I found, I was kind of interested in that, and went to a library, sent my resume to a bunch of staffing firms based all over. And Kansas City was one of the ones that I had highlighted. I went to school in Iowa and got a job right out of school working for a staffing company as a recruiter. So that's how I got into it.
You knew going into it that that's what you wanted to be when you became a professional. Definitely not what we hear typically, but it's awesome nonetheless, because really when you started your career within this industry, it was at the birth or the onset of the explosiveness behind the technology movement. You've seen it from its inception to where it is now. So I'm sure there's some awesome stories that correlate to that. If you could go about kind of what a typical day looks like in the life of Matt, if that exists, right? I know that you have some foundations as far as your recruiting background, but also that entrepreneurial taste that you've done within this space. Can you give us a little bit of a background on that?
Yeah, well, I'm very fortunate to have a really good team of leaders that help run most of the day to day, including my COO, Charlie Fussell, and my director of recruiting, Doug Washington, and my partner who's been with me forever, Gene Pitts, who is a producer and wants to stay in the production role that he's in, as well as a great controller and great team behind me. But so really, a lot of what I've been focused on is just that next iteration of growth, how I can help not only land some new clients and customers, but also drive, some of the messaging and some of the looking at the journeys of our various constituencies with IT talent and with our customers, and understand what's the best way to engage with them, what do they see as the value. And then, so, a lot of what I've been doing lately is candidly on the marketing side and understanding, how do we take that next leap from where we are to, the next iteration of growth. And then I do a bunch of other things as far as just, I still love to go out on, different sales calls and talk with our associates and you know, still fairly involved with the business. But I have to say, you know, most of the heavy lifting stuff is left to the team that I have around me.
Yeah, and I'm sure that as part of your formation into a leader, there's a certain area, at least personally speaking, you know, there's a selfish aspect to this, but there's the art of delegation and knowing when mm-hmm. to hand things off. And it's awesome to hear that you've had the team to help support you in that retrospect. And I love your answer because it's spoken with true humility. So much respect in that regard. One of the things that I thought was interesting in looking and prepping for this episode was some of those objections that you guys may hear, you know, and I'm going to preface this by kind of setting the tone on the contingent workforce, the temporary project, mm-hmm. contract, freelance, gig, whatever you want to call it, has a dozen different yep. names under the sun. But you guys deal with a certain skill set at a certain caliber, let's just say much more technical, definitely the SMEs in the room. And there still could be this objection, even though one out yep. of every three Americans are going temp and contract. What are some of those ways that you drive against maybe a candidate when they say, you know what, I don't want to do temp, I'm not open to contract. How do you help yeah. really paint the picture towards, you know, this being an advantage to them and their career?
Yeah, and I think the first thing is you got to understand where that's coming from. Mm-hmm. And so before you even dive into it, I always, you know, try to understand what their perspective is of contracting. And I get it. I mean, that's kind of how we've all been brought up through the ranks is that, you know, you've got a lot more security as a full-time employee.
Right.
I think the conflict comes where really even full-time employee relationships are contract relationships.
Yeah.
And those contracts can be ended fairly quickly by an employer. And so, you know, one of the things that was really important to us is to look at this as let's build a consultant's consulting firm. So we started to offer health insurance at our cost. So we take care of the full cost of health insurance, instant match with, matching with instant vesting for a 401k through our 401k plan. And then also, you know, I think the thing that people don't understand is, you know, we've got 67 different corporate clients that we work with. And so if a contract ends, let's say 3 months or 6 months or something unexpected comes up, we have 66 other bridges to clients that we work with throughout the Kansas City area, as well as the Twin Cities area. So we've already got, you know, bridges into a lot of different organizations where if they're a permanent employee and they, let's say, get let go or quit, they're, you know, not always, but generally starting from scratch. And so I think that's a key difference between us, you know, it, having as many customers as we have and also being within IT. You know, there's been a sevenfold increase in IT jobs since 2000 over every other job, you know, combine them all, IT's grown 7x that.
Wow.
There's just a tremendous demand and will continue to be. And, you know, of course, you know, you've got to be good at your job. You know, I always say we can always take care of people who are A players and B players and even sometimes C players. But if, you know, if you can't show up, if you're not reliable or if you're, you know, not someone that gets along with others, it's going to be hard to keep a job no matter, you know, whether it's a full-time role or a contract role. But I always think there's a lot of, you know, misgivings that people have about contracting. And sometimes they don't understand. There's actually quite a bit of stability. In fact, we just had somebody that was with us for 5 years as a consultant at various companies and then found a permanent place where they like working there and they can convert to a full-time employee at that client. So it's also a way to try different organizations under our umbrella. And then once you find that place that, hey, this looks like, you know, where I want to spend the rest of my career, you can take that full-time role through us.
Wow, that's super interesting. I love how you guys made the investment as well to beef up your health insurance offerings, your 401k. This is truly an internal team member. That's the way that you guys treat them and see them. And I think yep. that's often sometimes a misconception that we see in the staffing and recruiting space, because let's face it, it's not like, you know, it's carried the best notoriety, but you guys have really done something to change and also, you know, manage the reputation and the way that you curate your talent pool. And it's interesting because sometimes, you know, there's studies out there that show long-term contract roles versus the average tenure of maybe a millennial or Gen Zer, which is maybe 3 years or two, I think 2.2 years was in a recent study, compared to 18, 20 month long engagements on the contract side. So truly, what is the apples oranges comparison here? Now you've seen many different things over the last few decades in this industry. What do you think are some of those things right now that truly excite you, some trends, maybe some of the different, I guess, phases that we're rolling into in the industry as a whole?
Yeah. So, you know, I think the way people buy things has changed quite drastically. And, you know, I think people, you know, want to do as much as they can without a sales representative involved in a process. But at the end of that cycle, generally they want someone that's going to advocate for them. And so, you know, it's a platform when you want it, a person when you don't. I think that is going to continue on. But I also think, you know, that within the, you know, changing jobs is a very stressful time, and you want someone that really listens to you and also advocates for you, and might also challenge you a little bit on what ideas you might have within, you know, evaluating different opportunities. Because, you know, I can tell you, being in the industry for 32 years, we have seen it all. And we do know there's places that aren't great to work at and others that are. And generally, it comes down to who the managers are, you know, what the value proposition of the company is, you know, what's the work-life balance, all those types of things. And so I do think, you know, I know there's a big push that people want to do as much as they can through platforms, but I still think at the end of the day, you do want to know that you've got a relationship with someone that's looking out for you, and you can talk with them about, you know, the pros and cons of different places, and also give you their perspective on you know, what they've learned about the clients that they work with.
Yeah. And you're touching on something that I think is that delicate balance of technology innovation with the human rapport and the human aspect at the end of the day, when we're dealing with human, humans' lives, livelihoods at stake. And I'm sure that you guys have discovered ways that can potentially help enhance the day-to-day monotonous oversight of maybe some of your recruiters, so that they can actually focus on building, developing rapport. Have you guys looked into or tapped into maybe some automation techniques that help kind of bridge that gap a little bit better?
Yeah. So a couple of things. You know, one thing that's changed the game, you know, whenever we're talking with different vendors, you know, the line is always, well, if it saves you one more deal, it gets you one more deal, it pays for itself. And we always kind of laugh at that because it is true, but we rarely find things that do that. But I will say there's a lot of different automations that we have seen quite a different, you know, that type of impact. And one is through a texting automation. Again, it's just another way to touch people that we already know. Now, you can't just blast everybody and anybody. It has to be people that they've either worked with you somewhere down the line or know about you, or maybe they interviewed, but they were, you know, second place finisher, what have you. So being able to stay in contact without it always being about you. So we find a way to, you've got to be smart about how often you do it, but a texting platform where, you know, you kind of catch them at that moment where they're like, you know what, I have thought about changing a job, I'm going to go ahead and call Tricom. And that's, you know, those moments that matter, and being able to remind them, hey, we're here for you, has shown a big difference for us as far as getting some extra deals from that. And then the other thing is we build an associate program where we do a lot of our sourcing and building of pipelines of talent through an associate program where they're basically going out and talking to people. So our more senior recruiters can work with someone once they've already been identified as, hey, I am going to start looking, or I have this skill set, but I've thought about, you know, what might be next for me. then they're talking to more of a senior recruiter. So it's a way for our senior recruiters to have more meaningful conversations versus, you know, the cold calling. And, you know, I also think it's important that, you know, the, you know, associates we bring on understand it's, you're still warm calling. You know, I always say, look, you're not calling someone for a job. Very rarely you're going to call Angela and Angela's looking for a job. You're going to call Angela and say, hey, you know, we work with 67 customers. We're here when you need us. You know, have you ever thought about what's next? I'd love to have a conversation when that time, you know, when it's convenient for you. That's a much better way to approach people and generally gets better response than, hey, Angela, I called you about a developer job across the street. That's, you know, basically a lateral transfer from what you're doing right now.
Wow. Gosh, I love that approach that you guys are taking and all the while still building critical elements of the foundational success of a recruiter. A pretty interesting approach that you guys have taken and couple that with what is a super cutthroat time. I think for many different staffing and recruiting agencies, you guys play a critical role in being that intermediary, but also knowing that times are somewhat tougher in terms of a talent supply. So I'm sure that there's conversations that you guys have with your clients to help maybe open up the number of applicants or to that end, even with your own recruiting force out there. There's a certain level of EQ that's involved to be a good recruiter. How do you guys manage the recruiters out there that are really trying to fight the good fight every single day, knowing how tough the market is out there right now for just talent in general? That's like not even saying good talent, talent, simply applicants for roles.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, you've got to have empathy because it is tough. I always tell people, hey man, if you call, you know, 50 different people and 49 of them don't answer the phone, get really good at leaving a voicemail that actually, and try different things to see what might get someone to call you back. And, you know, the other aspect of it is helping them understand you've got to put the candidate first. It can't just be about, we're calling, you know, Joe because Joe has skills in IT and we might be able to place him. It's really got to be Joe focused. And, you know, so you've got to constantly be thinking about what those messages are and keep it them focused and centered on, you know, what would be in it for them. And I think most, you know, people that know our industry know that, you know, we make a commission. But you know, it's hard fought. It's extremely hard time. And I, you know, I don't have any qualms about saying, yes, they should make commission. Their base salaries are very high, especially with us, but you know, they've earned it. They work super hard. You know, it's a lot of phone time, a lot of Zoom calls and a lot of rejection. Mm-hmm. And you've got to be okay with understanding, again, you know, the great majority of people that you talk to aren't going to be in an active job search. And that's okay. It's more about building that relationship for when that time comes.
Yeah, that's super powerful. And it really comes down to that. I think those are some of the key qualities on recruiting tactics. Now, if we could just press the fast forward button, you know, let's go ahead and take a look at what you think the industry is going to look like in the next, right now. I know right now there's a lot of rumblings on what the heck is happening in general, right, with our economy. But where do you see the biggest growth opportunity for the industry and maybe in IT specifically over the course of the next, let's say, 5 years? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a bigger mix of contingent workers within companies, just with the tools changing as rapidly as they do. I think companies are looking at contingent staffing as a way to ebb and flow through projects. You don't have the fixed costs. And really, at the end of the day, it's a way to hire talent, too. I mean, I always tell people, you know, don't hire Tricom for a start date. Hire us for anniversary dates. Hire us to bring the right tenured talent to your team. So when you want to convert one of our consultants, you can, and then they stay with you. Mm-hmm. And if we can show that person has performed at a high level over time, you know, if they stayed there 5 years versus a year and a half, that's a huge ROI. And I think we've got to really get down to that and be able to start showing and demonstrating that we're really good at this. And also, you know, candidly, it's helping organizations get out of their own way a little bit with some of the hiring practices that still rely on bias. And then I think the other thing is upskilling and reskilling. I think companies are going to have to, just because there's so much demand, look at ways that they can reskill people into IT or upskill some of their own internal employees who might be working in a different area into technology. Because, you know, it used to, at least I did, I always thought you had to be, you know, this math wizard to get into, you know, programming or whatever IT role at the time. And really it's more logic based. I mean, there are obviously some positions that are, you know, heavily math based, but there's a lot of roles within IT that are not as, you know, math heavy, and they're more about working with, you know, product owners, for example. You're working with technologists, and you're also working with the business. So being able to explain complex things to your various users, you know, building that trust between both of them, there's a lot of opportunity for us to keep growing. And I also think there's a lot of opportunity for us to help our clients get better at, you know, really the total cost of ownership of their own team, and help them understand, you know, you might be looking at this as an expensive endeavor versus hiring someone full time. But if that person that you hired full time doesn't stay, or they're not a good performer, it really hurts the organization way more than you might think it would. And if you hire a consultant, it's very similar to getting engaged before you get married. You're able to really make sure the fit's there. They get along with everyone. They can show up. I mean, people are always usually let go because they can't show up or they're not very nice to other people. Those are the two main reasons people get let go. And with consulting, you've got that try before you buy. And then also, I think just helping our customers get really good at building their teams and being able to ebb and flow with the rapid rate of change within technology and the tools and how organizations are structured as well.
I completely carry a lot of the same sentiment. And just to kind of bring everything around, certainly a rise in the contingent workforce is what we can look to expect. The investment in reskilling and upskilling. And we know that there's a significant generational impact to that as well, because that's almost seen as a benefit nowadays. When a candidate is looking to apply or take on a job, what is the investment they're going to make in ensuring that my skills stay attuned? Maybe going behind the covers and looking at what areas unintentionally were causing bias in the number of applicants. So many different great and wonderful things that you touched on. And as we're speaking through future and futuristic strategies, I'm going to reference this one point that I thought was so impactful at the beginning of the year. You know, it's the beginning of the year, is the dawn of 2022. And, you know, you're just vibrated on what the wonderful things lie ahead for the year. And I remember reading something in SIA's top 12 predictions of 2022, and number 11 was the recruiter is no longer, right? There's going to be this connection of adopting a recruiterless staffing because of the technology, because of the fancy and sexy AI and automation and all of that. Especially as that connection and a lot of the monotonous things that we do is handled by sourcing technologies. What is your take on that as we're looking in through 5-10 years ahead of us?
Yeah, I just think, you know, we've got to up our game. I think, you know, people are, you know, worried about, you know, recruiter-less staffing. And I'm like, yeah, bad recruiters are going away. And that's okay. I mean, if they're not adding value, they should. They should go away. You should engage with talent and understand when that time is. And you should have a focus on what's in it for your talent. But I also think it's a mistake to assembly line and start treating people as widgets. I think it's a really slippery slope, and there's a lot of unintended consequences. Again, I think we all want the platform as much as we can up until something goes wrong, then we want the person, right? I think that's very similar in your career, which is one of the most stressful, you know, things that you can do is change jobs. You want someone that truly advocates for you and is has got other relationships. So if, you know, that one doesn't work out with that employer, they've got these other bridges to places, and they can give you their honest take, and they can even have you talk with other people that they've placed at XYZ company, and they can tell you, you know, this is what it's like here. I've been here for, you know, X amount of time, and, you know, this is how they manage. This is, you know, deliverables, you know, and obviously culture is very, very important. And I think people are starting to understand, you know, I don't want to, you know, have a drive to work that I regret or don't like. And most people aren't driving to work anyway. I drive to work. I like to be in the office, but I understand that's changing. But, people want to enjoy what they do. And I think we've got to start, you know, putting value propositions together for employers to help them understand, hey, there is work to do, and it is work, and it is hard, but here's what it's doing for our clients, and here's how we're making the world a little bit better. And I think that's where people can connect to. And then also it's, you know, making sure that they feel like there's opportunities for them to grow in their careers and be challenged. And I think that's the other thing people need to understand is, you know, people want to learn and they want to get better at their jobs. And we've got to, you know, find ways to, you know, build that ladder for them. Yeah. And a lot of times it's kind of challenging, maybe some mindset that they have based on work or based on, you know, what everyone's told them, which is, hey, you got to be promoted. You got to be a manager, blah, blah, blah. And I think, well, do you really want to be a manager? I don't know. I got to be managing. I'm like, I don't like this. And I had to kind of figure out a lot of things. And I, you know, candidly would much rather be in a production role, but I kind of fought that and actually had to build a team around me because they're a lot better managers than I am, quite candidly.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I love all the examples that you're drawing from on the those qualities of just a fantastic recruiter, and you simply cannot get that backed by technology, or not at least anytime soon. All right. So a couple more questions as we're wrapping up today's show. I gotta bring it up. You hear it and you touch on it. You're in this industry. I'm sure you guys have been dealing with ghostings and the no call, no shows, and this person resigned. Yep. They walked off on the job. Y'all are in the thick of it every single day.
Yeah.
What is your view? What has been the last, I would say, since the onset of the pandemic, on this war on retention and this great resignation in general? What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, you know, I think I see it as a pendulum that swings between, you know, candidates and clients, and it's like centralization or decentralization. It's like, oh, it's always going
back. You've seen it in so many ages, right? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And we're on that far side of candidates having the most power. And it's easy to see why, with the growth, low supply, working from home, changing views on, you know, work-life balance. But I do think sometimes the pendulum goes a bit too far. And, you know, we've got to make sure, now, believe me, you know, I think there's been a lot of missteps employers have made in regard to, you know, the workforce and, you know, helping managers get better and what have you. But, you know, I do think there's a lot to be said for hard work. And some of the best things in my life were things I had to work extremely hard at and, you know, at times fought. And I think that's okay. And I think at times in the world that we're in now, it's easy to kind of cut and run and go, well, I'll go get, you know, this other job's going to pay me a little bit more. It's like, well, are you going to like that one much better just because it's $5 more an hour now? You know, you've got to, I think, embrace some things that are hard and get good at them. And then I think, you know, over time, you know, your character is who you are. I will say, look, what we do is we focus on who first. We don't look at skill set as much as character, attitude, motivation, and aptitude. Someone's got to be a high character person. They got to have a good attitude to work with people. You know, they've got to be motivated to work. And then they've got to be able to learn new things. And if they have those things, that's really 65 to 70% of what makes them successful employees. The tools are going to change. But the ghosting and the not showing up, I mean, that's you're you can get some chinks in your armor there for the character side of things. And I think that's going to catch up with a lot of people over time.
Yeah, some definitely some wise words of advice that you've given us. Now, let's take it a step back. We've gone into the future. You've talked about the current times. If Matt could talk to Matt many years ago, whenever you had the chance to start this, or maybe for that listener that's tuning in and thinking of taking the big leap of faith and maybe starting their own agency, what advice would you give to them or even to yourself when you were looking to embark on this journey as an entrepreneur within this industry?
Yeah, I said, go for it. You know, I got to the point where, you know, enough stuff happened. I'm like, I don't know. I felt like an imposter, but I think, you know, you got to say, why not me? And I also think that just because you don't know something doesn't mean you're dumb. It just means you don't know it yet. And you've got to go find people and lean on others that have that knowledge. And I certainly have. That's one thing I can tell you for sure is that, you know, I thought I knew a few things and I really didn't know hardly anything. But I knew I was always pretty honest with myself and said, okay, I got to go find this or that to help me because I'm really, you know, either don't like doing it or I'm not very good at it yet. But I, you know, I'll say go for it. It's a great business to be in. You know, it's, you've got to do it for the right reasons. It's not just about making a bunch of money. You've got to do it to actually add value for both your candidates and your clients. You've got to build long-lasting relationships. I mean, and then just focus on getting better and be honest with yourself about, you know, what's actually getting done each day. And if you're really making a step forward. And look, you know, when I started, they told me, you know, you had to make so many calls. And I said, all right, I'm going to make twice as many. And they looked at me like I was crazy. I said, look, I want to get good at this. And I was terrible, to be honest with you. I had a mundane voice. I didn't have the inflection. People were hanging up on me.
A mundane voice.
And then I just started, practicing and getting better. And then I started saying, okay, this I'm at least getting conversations. And so it wasn't always about, like, am I getting closer to a placement? It was more about, am I getting people to talk to me and am I building relationships and do I understand what they do and can I help them down the road? And once I start building enough of those types of people, I started getting the placements and things took off from there.
Wow. You know, I think that a lot of what you said can really find itself transcending beyond the entrepreneur and just some very good life value. So thank you for sharing that. That was awesome.
Absolutely.
All right. Sure. So as we're wrapping up today's show, tell me about your content diet. And I ask this because, gosh, we're in the information age and we know what it feels like to scroll through our phone and to open our inbox and kind of roll our eyes and maybe just be like, I don't want to deal with this type of information today. But what are you doing to stay informed, to stay up to date, maybe the different happenings that are going on, you know, personal values or even, you know, professionally, to just stay informed?
Yeah. So, you know, a couple of things we underwrite, CIO of the Year awards for both the Twin Cities and Kansas City markets through Inspire CIO. That's been a you know, a big game changer for us to start developing relationships, understanding at the C level, what's going on and what their challenges are. My content diet is, you know, I usually walk at a track. I used to run, now I'm a walker. But I've been listening to You Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins, which is phenomenal. I mean, I just, as I walk, I want to start running because it makes you feel like you can do a whole lot more than what you think. And a lot of it's about just mindset and overcoming some things. And then I also finished Atomic Habits, and I recommend, highly recommend both of them. Atomic Habits is also extremely good for our industry. And then lastly, Lou Adler, I'm a huge fan of his. I recommend all his stuff. You know, he's a big, you know, one of the people that I really think it's got it as far as, you know, why people, you know, want to work for companies. It's not about lateral transfers. It's got to be about how they're going to grow and get better. And you got to put them first. And so a huge fan of Lou. And there's a bunch of others too. I go to SIA and I meet with, you know, the various owners. I've talked to a lot of the different people that have built businesses like mine organically up to $100 million. And that's what we're going to try and do. And so that's, I take a lot from them as well.
Oh, good. Look, I have no doubt that you and your team will get there. I'm actually reading Atomic Habits right now. And Wow.
Very good.
Game changer. Game changer.
Yeah.
When I have time, I open it up and I'm in it. So Lou Adler's also somebody that I've listened to before. Very good. And I'm going to wait. What was the first one that you mentioned? You can't.
Oh yeah. You Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. So,
You Can't Hurt Me. All right.
Oh my gosh. Amazing. Amazing story of a kid who came from the absolute worst circumstances. Went through Navy SEAL training and then became an amazing athlete. So I'll let his story cannot be told in a very small snippet. It's just amazing what he's done. But I think the major lesson there is overcoming what's all, you know, the governor in your mind that wants to take shortcuts all the way. And if you can start, you know, overcoming that, you'll start really growing and getting better. And you can pretty much do whatever you put your mind to if you're willing to work hard for it.
Yeah. Awesome. You Can't Hurt Me. Definitely going to check that one out. Okay. So we have come to an end. Where can we find you? Where can we get a hold of you? And we're all probably recruiters and staffers, which means that we're part-time PIs. So we will find you.
Yeah. So TriCom TS is my website. Matt Sharpless emails matt@TriCom TS. But we're on LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook, and we just got an Instagram. I'm trying to get up to date with you know, all the social media.
Pretty soon we'll find you on TikTok.
And, yeah. Well, they've talked to me about that, but I need to learn some dances or something. I don't know. I'm already showing how old I am because I hardly understand it. But my kids are all over it, so I'm like, okay, there's definitely eyeballs on this. How do we convert eyeballs to look at what we're doing?
Yeah, that's awesome. Matt, it was absolutely fantastic to have you on the show. And thank you to our listeners. Thank you to you as well. I always wrap up every show with this because I think it holds true, but time is honestly the most valuable gift that we can give to one another. So we appreciate your time, Matt, and of course to our listeners as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We'll see you guys on the next episode of the Ivy Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.